Let me open the meeting officially and welcome all of you, honorable members and our support staff. I also welcome the officials that arrived already from the Department of Health, who will have an engagement in a few minutes. And we spend with in a few minutes to approve the meeting needs. Let's go through the minutes of the 19th of April. On the first page, I hope everybody recorded correctly. On the second page, we have the DPM. Page 2. I think that there's one issue we said was investigation. What I'm not very certain about is, I suppose we were saying that it should be looked at by TPM himself. I remember the issue that came out about the it's on page 3. Paragraph 3.8. The growth of university fees outstripping the NSFAS funds. Remember, the issue was raised that as NSFAS goes up, the university fees also go up. And we were saying, could that be the reason why the number of students that are fresh in a sort of reducing cost? Money that should benefit the needy students gets probably consumed in other forms by the increased university fees. And we're saying that that's the case in this investigation. Now, I'm raising an extension to the particular question whether we should say this. Is it DPME which must investigate that? Is it STEM-FA? Because I think we need to give some direction, specific direction. Whose responsibility it is to investigate that? But we need to make a note that we did say so, that this kind of thing is going to investigate. I'm saying now an additional matter is who should do that. But we were raising it with DPME. And I'm not so sure myself whether DPME would be the relevant instruction to do that. There's a suggestion. Never been adopted.
thanks for that, Mr. Chair. I think we can request FSA to really deal with the matter of investigation, because it's really our concern here. It's like you are putting a drop in the ocean, because when you look at balloon house, it increases the flow of so it's a challenge.
Honorable members, would that be a fair suggestion? Okay, thank you. We will ask the question to do that. Anyone who supports the adoption?
Sorry, is it my friend?
Yes, Honorable Matthew.
In the summary of decisions, 4.1, bullet point 3, if I remember correctly, we didn't just want a list of the national departments that owed municipalities money, we also wanted the amounts that they owed.
Yeah.
We wanted the names and the amounts. All it says here is a list of the names.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes. Then it just records it was the names and the amounts.
Okay, let's do that amendment. Any further comment on that? On the decisions, no. Second, Honorable Manana, again. With those amendments. Thank you. The minutes of the 20th, the first page, just ensure that everybody is recorded correctly. And we can say they can share Honorable.
I
definitely was in such a meeting, and on the notice of the Okay, directors so that they don't drawn to form other companies and then go back to...
That is what they bring in here, that's what we discussed here. So we will know exactly. But by getting a list of them, and then we could do a simple check, and then we'll see whether they are now by trying to mislead us or form another company. Yes, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Then I think we need to make the necessary amendments in 5.1.2 as well, because that, that talks to the same issue.
Yes, and I think we did say that that list should also, we must also make sure that it goes to the office of the chief procurement officer. Okay. Any further amendments? Proposal for motion? Yes.
On the last page.
Yes, on the last page.
Chair, remember we also discussed at great length the issue of...
On your mic?
We discussed at great length the issue of the VIP toilets. And we wanted all the information relevant to those two contractors that merged and got this entire contract at the expense of everybody. But then I think we found that it would be appropriate for you to go to Treasury so that we could get it from Treasury. Or the supply chain, chief program. So that I think should be included as one of our decisions that we took, that that information is vital, because we wanted to go to the investigator and IT to see exactly what has actually gone wrong, then how is it that these two companies merged for one company and got the entire contract for the VIP toilets and actually got paid 95% and only 56% of the work was being done.
We were saying that that information has gone to Treasury and then Treasury has come back to us on
it. Okay, if we are entitled to get it directly, then that is what we're requesting. I'm just not sure whether we are within our mandate to get that directly, or it must go by the Treasury or the Chief Procurement for us to be able to get it. I'm not sure. But ideally, I think it would be better if it came through to us since we are deliberating on this and we need to engage the department again.
Yes. You're right. We need that information to get back to us as possibly we are doing oversight on all of these things. But I think the point you're making as well is how then does that information come to us, to the National Treasury, to procurement, for instance, so that we, you know, what we must avoid is to get a department telling us one story and we get another story from Treasury where it evolves, for instance, procurement, we get a third story from the chief procurement officer. We get a third story from that's what we're trying to do. So I'm not sure how we want to start that such that we ensure that's fine, I can speak for you. So that I think that's what they're trying to do. And I think we must do that for all departments so that we avoid being told different things at different times on the same subject. So if we could leave the secretary to craft that in a manner that makes, we're saying we want it because he raised the issue, we want information coming direct to us. But also we must give direction to the relevant, for instance, to Treasury or to Treasury, to the office of the preferential procurement officer via, of course, National Treasury, so that that information, what we receive here is the same information. If it is not the same, then we have the opportunity to query it further. Okay. And of course, there are certain things that we must decide to go and see for ourselves, particularly projects. So that does not exclude members identifying areas where we must physically go and have a look at those things as part of our site. Okay. All right. Anyone who moves for adoption?
I move for adoption, Chair.
Honorable Chairman, moves. Seconder. Honorable McDougall, seconds. Thank you very much.
Sorry, Chair, can I have your indulgence? I need to run up for a debate on international relations. I'll be back shortly.
Fine. Thank you. On that note, let me just add that we, besides the standing apology from Honorable Nyalung, we don't have any other apology.
Apologies for raising this issue, and I do understand it's an important compliance issue, but I'm raising this because we've seen exactly what can happen when we have a meeting to comply with the process, and then we have EPCs at the same time. I just want us to think about this thing. I understand we also have permission, fine, but I mean, now we have, and I'm not supporting him, I mean, he's from the NFP, so sorry for him, but it might happen to me. Now, you know, for somebody to debate, to run out of a committee meeting to debate, it surely is another way that we could have these meetings instead of having meetings and not have them concurrent with the EPCs. I just want to raise an issue. We might not be able to resolve it now or resolve it in any time, but I just wanted to raise that point. Thanks.
Okay. It's a matter that perhaps could be looked at with the the House chairperson responsible for scheduling of such things. And hopefully it can be resolved. But in the circumstances, I'm certain it can't be resolved any time soon. Yeah. Okay. May I again welcome the Minister of Health, Honorable Mzwaledi, the Deputy Minister, Honorable Pasa, and officials of the department. And thank you very much, Minister and Deputy Minister, for your attendance. We also appreciate the delegation that you're coming in with, so that we can have a full discussion on the matters. The challenge that we are going to have is that there is a meeting taking place here at 1 o'clock, another meeting taking place at 1 o'clock, and we will then be limited in that regard. So we need to try and finish by between 12:30 and go to 1 so that we can clear the room. Hopefully we will be able to deal with the matters as fully as is possible. And I do want to say up front that we have a practice in the committee that whatever issues that have not been addressed, especially from arising from questions from the members, may be responded to in writing as well. Thank you very much. We will hand over to the department to do the presentation.
Thank you very much. Chairperson, you have already introduced me as the Deputy Minister. Yes, I'm with the officials here on my right, Mr. Ian van der Merwe, the CFO, is the one who will make the main presentation. Then we've got Ms. Heinerelli there, who's responsible for corporate services. At the extreme there, we've got Dr. Gail Andrews, she's responsible, she's the COO, the Chief Operating Officer. Behind me is Ms. Jeanette Hunter, who's responsible for primary health care. Mr. Ian van der Merwe will make a presentation on our behalf. Chairperson, may I just request, I've got a radio interview at 12 o'clock. This is a very unfriendly room. We can't see people who are speaking. I had somebody there saying there's a problem which cannot be resolved anytime soon. I'm sure mine also can't be resolved anytime soon. It's an interview with SBSM. It will take place at 12:15, so I'm going to be asked to be released and come back after that. Thank you. Oh, yes. I also forgot to apologize for the Director General of the Department. She's at the World Assembly. At the World Organization in Geneva, because she's the chairperson of the Athletics Board of the WHO, and they are preparing for the World Health Assembly later this month, so she's definitely not going to be able to be here this week. Thank you.
Let me just repeat what members said last week, that if there is an apology from part of one of the delegation, it should come in writing. But we'll accept that there is an apology for now. Okay. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. This is, I'll go through the presentation. Just to say that we have looked at your term of reference and the invite letter. We've kept to that. I hope we will do the issues justice. It's within 12 slides, and also looking at the four specific bullets that were raised. So just to say that what we're looking at will be the pending performance on the conditional grants in the third quarter. We'll also touch on the fourth quarter preliminary results, facility delivery implications, the challenges on healthcare waste management, the remedial actions also on the healthcare information systems, and then some response to the two reports and recommendations by this committee, some response to that. So Chief, if you look at our first quarter expenditure, and this is for the Schedule 4 and 5 grants, because these are grants that we transfer back to our provinces. We're sitting at 73% spent, or 23.5 billion of a budget of 31 million. This is compared to 70% in the same period in the previous year. So in terms of percentage, we actually went a little bit backwards on the third quarter that we picked up in the fourth quarter, which I'll show. The grants that are showing low expenditure at the time was NHI, we're sitting at 53%. Our National Emergency Service grant at 72%. But compared these two, our 4-15 outcomes, there was a slight improvement. Grants that were close or in the norm at the time was the Health Professional Training Development Grant, the HIV grant, as well as the Health Facility Revitalization Grant, the Infrastructure Grant. On the other grants, and these are grants, as you know, that are with National Health, and we spend on behalf of provinces. We had 3-4% spent, a slight improvement on the previous year, but our preliminary expenditure has moved quite a bit to 96% on top of it now, basically on the back of reduction of budget. So we had to return some funding back to provinces on the revived grants. If you go to the number itself, Jay, you will see that the column to the left, which shows the preliminary outcomes at the end of March, we're showing that as prelim because our provinces are still reconciling final expenditures. At the time of print, we were still looking at preliminary numbers. So we foresee some small changes on those numbers. But just to do the comparison on the training grant, we at the third quarter, we were requested, we were 72% expenditure. The dirty service grant was a 72% at all, HIV grant at 74% spent, revive grant at 76% spent, and the National Insurance grant at 53.8% expenditure. When looking at our fourth quarter preliminary results, you can see that most of the expenditure has actually moved quite considerably. We're in the top 90% on four grants, and our insurance grant at 86%. And this has been the best performance on this grant compared to the last two financial years. The indirect grants also showed some improvement. You will recall that last year, especially on the NHI component, which is mostly the contracting of GPs, we were at 27% spent for the financial year. This year, at the end of the third quarter, we were at 63% spent, and the uptake has been good in terms of our budget numbers, we say, and we were sitting at 96% spent by the end of the fourth quarter. Our EVA grant, again, was quite low in the previous financial years. We were at 40% spent by the end of the third quarter. But we do see that our efforts are gaining momentum. So we've got quite a few contractors on site now. We've got quite a number of professional service providers who are providing oversight, QS, architectural, mechanical engineering services. And that has given us expenditure or slight over 20 as it stands now, of 2% by the end of the financial year. But the point I'm going to make, Vijay, is that if you just look at the budgets, you'll see there was a reduction in budget from 913 to 612 from original to adjusted budget. And that revised component of that budget was mostly returned back to provinces as part of the direct grant expenditure. And you'll see the expenditure, you'll see the increase in budget when you look at the revised grant and schedule 4 and 5 grants. The HPV components was 34%. We're sitting at 79% spend at the moment. There are a few items that still need to be accounted for, especially on the transport invoices. So we hope that we can share that expenditure, unless we have to accrue it in for the next financial year. As you know, that this expenditure is also cyclical. We do two exercises in the financial year, and in the last quarter, this has come as part of expenditure. So the impacts also. Yep.
If you allow me to see the issue of the HPV component, I just want to stress that this is work done from 2014 annually in March and in October. In other words, in March, we get into the schools, immunize all these kids in grade 4 and finish. And then we go October, they repeat it. So the work has been done and completed. What you are doing here is bookkeeping. When are you going to complete our books? But in terms of the work, we finish it in March. Is it February or March? Yes, we finish it in March. We do a certain number of school girls, all of them who are in grade 4, who are 9 years old. Then we repeat in October. And that we have been doing from 2014. So what we are giving here is numbers of amounts of money that has been spent. But the work has long been completed. So when the receipts come in, it will reflect the true picture. But I just want to emphasize that the work has been done and completed.
Right, thanks. Then, moving on to the second part of your question, the surgery implications on state expenditure. We do see that the many provinces make a day-to-day expenditure thing that the late payment of surgery providers still cause financial problems, especially at project level. We do encourage provinces, especially on case by case, you know, if there's cases that come to our attention. But also, you know, through our CFO forum, we're trying to look at the 30-day expenditure trends. Some provinces have shown improvement, but many of them we have difficult in the last quarter, especially when they've got cash flow, or certain cash flow issues coming to the end of the budget cycle. The other one that we're saying is that the revive grant especially is that we're moving for provincial treasuries to ring-fence those on transfer to the Departments of Health. In some provinces we still see a case where when they get into cash flow problem, they would then use the cash for purposes other than, for instance, the issue of infrastructure. And that then gives a position where infrastructure is underspent, we have to request rollovers, and you can only request for rollovers if you've got a certain level of cash on hand. So we've had some success in provinces like Gauteng where we ring-fenced all the grants going there. And we also track the amounts that we transfer from provincial treasuries to provincial departments of health. We track it on a monthly basis, and if you see that those transfers are very low, then we do engage with those provincial treasuries. The issue of the payment processes is trying to streamline and shorten the payment process to avoid some late payments. A typical example would be where expenditure has to be confirmed or verified by Department of Public Works, for instance, and that puts quite a bit of lead time on your payment. So many provinces have an issue with that, and we're trying to address it with those relevant departments. We also find that, especially when it comes to health technology and equipment, that planning is extremely poor to some extent. And we track it as part of our non-negotiable expenditure, and many provinces do have or show that they are not spending the total budget for equipment. At National Health, we've taken some lead to assist with budget preparations. We've also taken some steps that we can procure on behalf of provinces through RT tenders that are available. We've done that, and we procure on their behalf from our own funding. But the idea would be for provinces to be able to set up their own structures, their own call attenders or supplier databases where they can source the equipment from. And this is also one exercise that we're doing in conjunction with the CPO's office at the moment, where they're developing certain specs for certain equipment on the essential equipment list. Then maybe the last one, and there's quite a few, but I've only shown this five, is that there's some also inability to recruit and retain health professionals, especially at rural hospitals. The number of professionals available are so, you know, are fixed, and the need is quite bigger than that. So there's some difficulty in retaining or recruiting those. And that's the reason why, to some extent, the NHI indirect grant was reduced slightly over the financial years. But as you can see from our spending now, we think we've arrested that position, and we're able to spend entire budgets for that. So you also requested us to look at the healthcare waste management issues. We've looked at the number of challenges. One of the obviously is some lack of resources. You know, the equipment for in-house transportation and containers is not there. The vehicles is not always there, and also the human resource offices, the healthcare waste offices, are not always in place, and that's why most of this also gets outsourced. In provinces, we do find that some of these providers don't get paid on time, which results in either suspension of service or delay in certain services being rendered. There's a lack of central and temporary storage facilities or areas. And just a general management issue is the segregation of waste material at institutional level. So some of the reactions we're trying to implement with our provinces is to do some prioritization with budgets in wherever possible. Also to up the hiring and recruitment of healthcare waste officers. We've got, as you might know, a non-negotiable template where we monitor a number of items on a monthly basis, and we will try and put this as part of that non-negotiable item. We do have some control or some monitoring on waste management, but we do feel that probably with this intervention we should do a bit more in terms of monitoring that specific item. There's a structure procured for the development of waste cages that needs to be provided. And then the air policy and procedure booth for training to be adopted at different facilities. So these are all interventions that we're doing for the sector at our national offices. Just coming to your report and some of the recommendations, I will touch on the one of information technology law, which was part of your challenges that you wanted us to look at. But just to say that your 5.2.1 recommendation was that the Ministry of Health should ensure that the department in partnership with National Treasury and Department of Monitoring Relation and the FSC consider a review and an answer of the efficiency and effectiveness of conditional grant frameworks of the health city in ensuring accelerated service delivery and quality of service to all. So sure, we've done that as a department of National Treasury. We sit with them once a year, or at least once a year, to look at the treasury frameworks and what the frameworks require. And we also try to streamline those in terms of our reporting requirements and see what is practical. So we've done it for, especially on the infrastructure grants and to some extent also on the HIV grant. When it comes to efficiency, we looked at the NHI grant, the REC grant, and with Treasury we decided that this grant would come to an end in 2017-18. So this is the last year that we will reflect that grant on our budget as a transfer to provinces. So in the subsequent years, those budgets will be incorporated in the National Health Indirect Grant, which would then form part of the department's overall budget. This is also done, as you know, in terms of the scope of constraints that are there. We were kind of instructed to also look at savings and where we can do some budget cuts, and that was part of that exercise as well. As I said, we do reassess grant frameworks, all grant managers. The one thing that they haven't done specifically to this recommendation is to sit with the FSE specifically. So I think we need to take some leadership from Treasury on that and use them as a conduit to sit with the FSE and also brief them on the grant framework and what we intend doing with this. And so your second recommendation, 522, said that we should work with DBMB and CITA to develop an advanced system that monitors and systematically tracks all aspects of performance in each facility in a country. And this also goes to your bullet number 2 that spoke about some challenges on health information systems. And we've done some considerable work on this one, Chair. We've been implementing an electronic primary healthcare project, and it comprises patient administration, web-based information, and all of that is to deal with the access and availability of health information decision-making. So in this project, consists of what we call a health patient registration system. We've done that in conjunction with the CSIR, the Department of Science and Technology, and it uses and basically uses a single identification number to identify patients as they move around within our facilities. So we've had a slow uptake initially, but we can see the impact of it now. We completed this system at 657 of the targeted 700 facilities in the NHI pilot. So this is only at the moment looking at NHI pilot power districts. A big aspect of this was the rationalization of registers, especially in primary healthcare facilities. It was implemented from April 2015, and the idea was to reduce all registers into one. I mean, there was some facilities that had 15 or 18 registers, all manual, and the idea is that we can reconcile all of this into one. And also, in some extent, also address the audit outcome or audit queries on the performance, on our performance IPP indicators. And this was done at all facilities in the province except for the Western Cape. They do have their own system that meets all the requirements. The standardized patient filing system and patient file has been piloted in 10 NHI facilities. We're waiting for the results of this pilot for further implementation. We're also conducting a rapid assessment in partnership with the CRR to identify the gaps in existing information systems, to rationalize hospital information systems and data collection tools. So it's an effort to make sure that there's some uniform ways of dealing with information systems throughout the provinces. We have a monthly feedback session from provinces. We do it at our NISA quarterly meetings. This is a National Health Information Systems meeting where we incorporate all provinces, including auditors, if need be. The health survey has shown some significant progress. We have received some funding from our development partners, 20 million from the EU and 7.9 from the Global Fund. The survey commenced in November 2015, and the data collection for the year will commence in May 2016. And the NHI will develop accelerating mechanisms for targets were not met in 2016 for the fast-tracking purposes. For example, the MMC service delivery sites are being expanded to additional sites to contact with even other mechanisms. That's it. In short, it's just trying to address the recommendation was to monitor all aspects of performance in each facility in the country.
Just before you continue, Chairperson, can I maybe try to simplify and summarize what has been said? We have got teams on the ground which has been working, starting with any pilot project, to install computers, firstly, because most of our facilities don't necessarily have them, to install computers and install this patient registration system, which we never had in the country before. What is said here is that we have completed 657 of the 700 facilities. Part of the problem is the broadband in the country. As you know, it is a national problem of broadband, especially in rural clinics. But if it was not for that, we were continuing this project. So we have completed 657 out of 700, which means the others will be completed very soon. But in the financial year, starting from April, we're taking another 1,500 facilities extra. Yes. Now, we are going to complete this project by 2018. What it then means, Chairperson, is that if you go to any health facility, even a small rural clinic in 2018, you'll be able to get to a file within 45 seconds, not 5 hours. People queue about 5 hours waiting for a file. This will be reduced to 45 seconds, not minutes, seconds. That's the first thing. The second thing is that if the patient has been to a clinic yesterday and comes to another clinic today, we'll know immediately. We'll tell the patient that yesterday you've been in this clinic complaining about the same thing, you've been given treatment. This is the treatment you've been given. Why are you here? I'm sure you understand why I emphasize that. Because at the present moment throughout, patients run from clinic to clinic collecting the same medication, especially HIV/AIDS medication. We are not able to know that is the same patient that collected the medication yesterday. In this system, we'll know and identify them. And we'll have records ready to show what has been done for each and every patient. The last thing that these teams are doing, which Mr. van der Merwe mentioned but wants to explain to them, when patients go to clinic, nurses are required to fill 52 different registers. Yes, you know, you fill a register for HIV, for TB, for this and that, until you're 52, and that's a lot of work. Now, this team has been rationalizing them to only 6. In other words, we are moving the registers from 52 to 6. Those are the only registers which has to be filled in by nurses. So this is the work that is being done, and by the end of 2018, we will have completed all the 3,500 health facilities in the country. I just wanted to explain that part. So it's a very important part in FIS Health Administration is concerned in our country. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Jay. So your recommendation 5.2.3 stated that we have to, in partnership with DPME, evaluate and implement mechanism for which responsibility of maintaining hospitals and other health infrastructure can be devolved to the Department of Health and other capital state agencies. So we've done what we can in terms of our mandate, and we've looked at the Viva Grant business plan specifically. And we were saying that if the emphasis is on maintenance, then we would look at those business plans and assure that even those business plans are biased towards the maintenance instead of new infrastructure. And we defined as well that in our review of grant frameworks previously that the grant frameworks do provide for a split of budget, right? It does say that you can have 50% for new infrastructure, 25% for maintenance, and 25% for refurbishment. So the tool to some extent is already there. And many provinces have now started to also split their budgets in their economic classifications between maintenance and current expenditure and capital funding. But we still find that the emphasis sometimes is on infrastructure instead of maintenance. So we will review and approve business plans if this split is adhered to, and if the business plans have a bias towards maintenance rather than new infrastructure, as I said. And this will probably also add that there's nothing in the law that says that you have to use public works as an implementing agent. You can find, as you rightfully say, the other capable state agencies. And if you evaluate and assess their capacity, then nothing prevents us from also contracting with those agencies.
Yeah. Just two issues. The first one, we actually want to make it a policy. Maybe the figure there put at 25%, I would actually even like to take it to say that if there's a conditional grant in any province, we'll insist that when they do their infrastructure planning, 30%, not 25%, are ready to go as high as that, must be put aside for routine, not routine, backlog maintenance. Yes, and then maybe 20% for refurbishment or routine maintenance, and only 50% for new infrastructure. Because there's a tendency in the country, in the provinces, for us to build new clinics and new hospitals when the old ones are not being maintained. So we'd like to make this a policy, meaning we will not be able to issue the funds. We don't know what will be the feeling of the committee unless we see that on the plan and say, no, we can't give you money because you are putting all the money to build new infrastructure when the old one is not being maintained. The issue of maintenance is very important. That's the first thing I want to emphasize. The second thing, Chairperson, I'm not sure why the recommendation of the committee is saying other capable state agencies and so there. I've been an MEC for education for many years. This has always been a battle, as far as I remember, between MECs for public works, MECs for education, and MECs for health, about delivery of schools, hospitals, and clinics. That war has always been very hot. There is a general belief that is part of the constitution, that if you want to build a school or a clinic in a province, you have got to use the Department of Public Works. There is no law that says that. There is not in the constitution. You're not supposed to, you can use any agency to deliver a school or a clinic for you if you think it's capable. But this old belief, which is so perverse in departments of public works, both national and provincial, is the one that is the problem. We are not able to preach it, to show that you are responsible for the funds, but you can use any agency that can deliver in time. If we can win that battle in the provinces, most of the infrastructure will run very fast. In some instances, we won it. For instance, when I was the MEC for education, just using one engineer, we delivered more schools in a period of 10 half years than the whole Department of Public Works did in 12 years period, because we were very fast. So I just want to emphasize and ask why the committee is only capable state agency, other capable state agencies. Because I believe it can be outside the state agency if that institution has got capacity. Because all we want is to see schools and clinics that are there, and that must be done within the law. So at the moment, we are forming a committee because we are in a very unfortunate position. Throughout all the years, this was not happening to us. It's now happening. The Auditor General is telling us that he is auditing us at the national level, not the people who are delivering this infrastructure. Now we are in a very unfortunate position at the national level where we issue money to a province of health, Department of Health, the department issues to a Department of Public Works. Anything that happens, whether it's wrong or fair or underspending or wrong procurement, etc., we are the ones who are being audited. That's what the Auditor General tells us. That you are responsible, regardless of who's doing the work. If they don't do the work very well, you take responsibility. But you don't have the authority to do that work. And that situation is really causing us very serious headaches within the department.
Just moving on to the other report by the committee. It was on 5.4.1, saying that the partner should plan and enhance its budget planning and strategic planning function in order to ensure improvement in the spending of performance, especially on its health infrastructure grants. So here we have done that. We've increased our overall expenditure for the same period in the third quarter from 64 to 76, but we're also showing a prelim expenditure of just over, we spent about 2%. We'll obviously still reconcile those numbers and make sure that the grant in total doesn't overspend, because that would not be allowed. We've also had improvements through interventions, projects, accelerating and contact improvements, monitoring. We're doing it through our IUSS program. This is our infrastructure unit supports systems. And we also, in that, appointed a number of project managers within provinces. So we have what we call in loco engineers, and these in loco engineers are dedicated to projects per province to make sure that there's some monitoring and evaluation. And I think this is one of the main issues in the past, where we didn't monitor properly, and we found quite a bit of irregular expenditures, especially on provincial projects. And Chair, lastly, is that the recommendation also says that the Minister of Health to ensure that the department ensures that all vacant posts are filled timelessly. We do consistently engage with the Department of Health to fast track the appointment, especially of what we call the DORA bus, and especially when it comes to HIV, NTSG, APDDG, and infrastructure. In the grant framework, we have allowed certain percentages to be spent on human resources. But we do find, because provinces get are placed in a total compensation of employees, that they are reluctant to appoint in terms of this in of DORA. And this is giving us some problem when it comes to our own APP and reporting. At the department itself, we can reduce a 4-month turnaround time for the filling of vacancies. The DBSA does allow, for 6 months, so we've tried to strengthen or curb or just make that requirement to the price that we have in our ATP, and we aim for 4 months turnaround time for the filling of vacancies. Chair, that addresses the terms of reference that we were given, I hope done it justice within the 14 slides. Thank you, Jeff.
Listen, may I just make a comment here, because I really like the committee to be understanding on the issue of vacant rooms, because we have made this statement before. Chairperson, she didn't have, when it comes, for instance, to the whole phase of delivery, meaning the technical people, doctors, nurses, etc., the ratio that has been used in the past throughout, obtained from the World Health Organization, was the number of health professional, the population. For instance, to say you need one doctor per 100 population, or one doctor per 10,000 people, etc. And you gauge how far you are with through that number. I just want to mention to the committee that it has been found by the World Organization that formula is meaningless. Again, regardless of the fact that it was used for many, many decades, it doesn't help to reflect the need. And so using it is very problematic. So the World Organization has come up with a completely new formula called the WISEN, Work Indicator for Staffing Norms. Work Indicator for Staffing Needs. It doesn't tell you that you need one doctor for every 10,000 people. It tells you many things, because you might get that one doctor per 10,000 people when you don't need it. What I'm trying to say is, some communities don't need as many doctors. They are very sophisticated, very advanced, and not very sick. Another community might have very, very sick people who are very poor and need even more doctors than the population suggests. So why then consider the burden of disease, whether it is rural, the demographics in that area, the poverty levels, the health seeking behavior? It's a sort of a mathematical formula. Now, because many organograms in provinces are still based on the old model, we are not really encouraging them that much to fill some of the posts, because they might not actually be needing them while we're doing WISEN. Now, we have completed WISEN at all primary health care facilities. That means in any clinic using WISEN, we'll be able to tell you the amount of vacancies, and that's scientific. We are now doing WISEN at scale. Where are we now? We are still at tertiary. Oh. Have we finished Central Hospital?
No, they haven't.
Yes, it's very complex there. If you have to determine the staff using WISEN through the skill of Chris Hannibal, it's an extremely complex job, but you are busy that you have completed the clinics. Now we have just started with the district hospitals to determine for each district hospitals. You see, I'm saying this, Chairperson, because 3 years ago we had a number of children dying in a hospital in Limpopo in George Mason. Within a period of a day or so, I think there were about 6 kids. It was headline news. The government then argued very strongly that they've got a shortage of doctors, and that hospital has got a shortage of doctors. I sent 3 experts there, including pediatricians and professors. They actually found that hospital has got more doctors than it ever needs. In fact, they said they've got an overload of doctors. But it was all over the media, and I was called in to ask, when are you giving these people doctors? When are you, you know? And when I asked him, I asked the then MEC, the person who was the MEC then in Limpopo, and asked him, where do you get this shortage from? And he said, no, I found it on the organogram. They said, we are sort of so many doctors. Who drew this organogram? It was drawn some years back, and nobody can tell us what was their points of reference. Because it was even beyond the World Health Organization formula of a number of doctors per population. So their problem was management, not the number of doctors. That's why I want to emphasize this issue. That looking at the organogram at the present moment and see their vacancies does not necessarily help us to actually get what are the needs in that area, unless it is based on WISEN. Once it's based on WISEN, then we'll know it's scientific. But it's a new thing. When we complete all the areas I've told you, we'll package the whole WISEN and give it to tertiary for the purpose of budgeting and say, these are the needs of health from now henceforth, in as far as human resources are concerned. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay. Yes. Any other agitation? No. Okay. Honorable members, I see Honorable Majorca, Honorable Manana, Honorable Fink, Honorable Lowe, Honorable Dufin, right in the order for now.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Thanks to the presenter, greetings to the Minister and Deputy Minister, and all the interest from the Department of Health. And thanks for the presentation. I want to take chair here. We appreciate the progress that has been made regarding the NHI, because really, as a nation, we are looking forward to the full implementation or kickstarting of this program, not the pilot project now. But our concern, Chair, is around the issue of the expenditure. I heard the Minister saying the work is completed. We are dealing with the something of the bookkeeping or, I don't know, payment, if I heard him well, Chair, to say that now it becomes difficult to us, you know, to really contribute, because we don't know what is state, the effort state. But what we are commenting on is what is before us, because we can't talk on what is not before us to say that we don't know how they are busy trying to pay and so on. But to us, what we see is the expenditure that is before us, that is low. But we want to take what are the reasons for such low expenditure rate, and what was a closing expenditure in the fourth quarter for this problem, as I'm saying that this is a very important problem for the nation, especially the poorest of the poor. Like in my constituency where I come from, in Umlalazi, you know, people are very sick in that area. I don't know why. Most of them, you see them walking, and the following day they are walking with wheelchairs. So which we think that maybe if they can get a good healthcare system, they will be in a position, you know, to be healthy, if we can understand that one. And the other thing, we want to know what are the key drivers of that low expenditure rate. What are the key drivers, and which provinces are contributing to this low expenditure rate, and those that are doing well in the NHI, if we can share with us, Honorable Minister and your team, so that we know exactly to say where are the problems around that. And also you look at the health facility revenue component of 40.8%, also with a low expenditure around that. I'm not sure on slide number six, chair, and number seven. There is an indication that says that late payment service providers by provinces, which is also a challenge. This is really problematic to us, you know, because the importance of paying suppliers on time has been repeatedly raised by the president of the country, especially because it relates to the promotion of SMMEs and job creation in the country. If now there is that late payment, and also it is the countries here are provinces, maybe it will be important for us to understand those provinces that are doing that, and also to understand whether is there any consequences for those failing to pay. You can also see that on the healthcare workers services also is a challenge, which results to suspension of services. And I think this suspension of services affects the real service delivery. And if there are no consequences, for those people that are failing to pay as a result of that, I think we'll continue having a problem around that. We'll continue to have a problem because we don't know why there is a late payment. And we see that the department is coming with the remedial actions. We see the remedial actions, but they are good on paper. Because if one can ask, it's provinces, that is the report that you are getting. We don't see the center that is pulling that those provinces together and also have monitoring of those provinces. But now there are remedial actions. Who are going to monitor these remedial actions now? And why it has not been prioritized? Because the way it is said here, they are saying it's going to be prioritized and to report monthly. Why it has not been prioritized after the high office in the land has made a call in the state of the nation address that payment service provider must be a priority, and it even indicated that it must be within 30 days. Why it has not been done? Why only now? Because this call to say that the payment of those small contractors or small business and all our businesses, it must be paid on time. And here you see the suspension of services. That is our concern as a committee. Because if they are not paid and are suspending the services, which affects delivery, which also affects the job creation, because if you stop, it means that everything is going to stop. It's really a problem that we think it needs to be monitored, Honorable Minister, and come close to it, because this project of NHI to us is key. Also, I've seen the other program. I'm trying to find out where is the tuberculosis and so on, also the lack of expenditure in the critical. I always hear the Minister of Health saying that, making a call for all the institutions under him to really focus on the tuberculosis, HIV and so on. But when you look at the expenditure, I don't know where I had it, but I still remember, you see that there is a low expenditure on the critical program. I think the good work that the department has done to reduce, you know, the death of the people with HIV and AIDS and so on is going to be reversed. If now you find that the expenditure on this particular important problem is going down, is not being really taken care. Also, there is around the issue of the challenges, I think it's slide 7 again, there is a lack of resources.
Excuse me, Chairperson, Honourable Member, we lost here. This last year about GB, which side are you talking about? We just getting lost. Can you reorientate that, please?
It's talking about HIV. Talk about HIV and AIDS, those programs. Where to look at your report? Yeah, it's HIV and I've lost the picture, Honorable Minister. Yeah.
Would it be slide 4?
Yeah, we're talking. Yeah, it's HIV and AIDS. It was tuberculosis. I think I was reading in the report of the department. I was reading in the report of the department. It's there. It talks about the
because I think it is also referring, because what we're referring to is also the third quarter report of the department. So some of our questions will also refer to that report.
Yeah.
So on the slip spending and stuff. So some of our questions will be in line with that report.
Yeah, we're looking at the report, Honorable Minister, not here. Also the issue of the outsourcing. it implies number 7, the challenges. It talks about the lack of resources. And also Minister emphasized on that. I know that in rural areas, some of the resources in the hospital in rural areas in terms of the challenges. But if you look here, it talks, the Minister said, you know, there is an outsourcing of this because they don't have it. But what is the plan to just have it, you know? Because the issue of outsourcing is very expensive sometimes. It's very expensive, the issue of outsourcing. You were talking about the lack of resources and then you were saying because you don't have those containers and so on, you end up outsourcing around that particular area. Maybe we can have a plan, because I think when we start the issue of the healthcare services, if we don't have the material, containers, transportation and so on, relying on the outsourcing, and we don't believe in outsourcing actually. Yeah, because if we outsource, it's one person that gets a lot of job instead of more people getting the job, because we are having a challenge of the unemployment in the land. So at the moment I will post maybe if it can come, I'll come back, so that I allow my colleagues also. Thank you.
I'm left. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me welcome the department and welcome the presentation. The Chairperson, on slide number 8, whereby the recommendation of the committee was indicating that there is a need in partnership with Treasury, Department of Monitoring and Valuation, FSC, to consider and review the enhancement of the efficiency and effectiveness of the conditional grant. We raised this issue, Honorable Minister, because the FSC raised it in their report to the Treasury that there is this urgent need. We will suggest that if In your response, you've indicated that you have met with a National Treasury, but not with the FSC. They are the ones who raised this matter, so it's very important that if you can have a meeting with them so that they can raise this matter very sharply. The second issue is on slide 12, where the Minister is indicating that it is not in the Constitution that Department of Public Works is the one that is supposed to do the work of other departments with regards to infrastructure. What I wanted to know is, have you had a meeting with the Minister of Public Works so that you can iron out this issue once and for all, because for a long time it was a problem. If you can maybe have a meeting, I need out, because I know at provincial level, public works thinks they are entangled. You can't move an inch if we are a Department of Health or Department of Education or those departments who have to build infrastructure for our communities. They need to buy public works.
It takes usually health and education, Honorable Member.
Yes.
Usually health and education, that are victims of that.
I know even agriculture, building of libraries, they are the one who are going to say, we are in touch, and even if you indicate that this is the budget that we have, but at the end of the day, they will double that budget. I think it needs to be resolved once and for all. Let me welcome the issue of the weekend post, the World Health Organization new stance now, because really for a long time it was really a problem. And I wanted to find out, do we have a time frame with regards to this
because I know our communities, they are complaining every day that there is shortage of staff in the facilities. Coming to the Auditor General's report, there were concerns that the Auditor General raised with regards to the expenditure in distribution of the ARVs. Have you managed to sort it out, that problem? I remember when the Auditor General was with us, he indicated that some of the provinces could not deliver, resulting in shortages in provinces such as Eastern Cape, Limpopo, and Mpumalanga. And they did not deliver according to the plan, and they did not spend the money accordingly, and they even did not inform the national department that there is this problem. Thank you very much. Oh, the last one, Chairperson, is with regards to the information technology infrastructure on health care facilities. The Auditor General indicated that they are updated, and they did not fully support the hospital administration system. I heard you when you were saying that at a clinics or health facilities at lower level, you are trying to put information technology infrastructure, but with regards to the linkage between clinics and hospital, how far are you? Thank you.
Honorable
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and thanks for the presentation by the CFO. Minister, thanks for your presence here. It's a pity you can't see me, but nevertheless, maybe you don't want it. On slide number... It's okay, let me finish, maybe you... Okay. Minister, thank you. On slide number 5. This is the financial figures now. It's good to see these figures, except a concern that I have with regards to these figures, and it's across the board. All the departments, they, and I understand you probably sit in some same meetings, that they all spend, they make up the shortfall in the fourth quarter. So it's just ironic that, you know, that is how they operate, but I obviously understand that it's probably going to be a reason for that. If you look at most of the figures, some of them you spend 33% in the last quarter, 62% in the last quarter, your HPV component 65%, you know, and the total you spend 42% in the last quarter. It's actually, it's just very strange from outside. I see you also indicate there that, Chairperson, these are preliminary, and the explanation was that there's a reconciliation that's been done. But can I just get a verification that that is not a forecast figure, it's actual spend which has been verified, or maybe to a lesser extent audited, that I just would like just an explanation of that. Please. Thank you. Then on slide number 6 and 7, and this is where you've indicated the concerns and the challenges, and these are scary and unacceptable, and that's why you put it here. So, you know, it's the information that we're getting, and as the Chairperson said at the beginning, is that we need to get out of this parliament and go out into the field to see what is actually happening there, because a lot of these challenges are unavoidable. But the consequences can be life-threatening at worst. So, you know, because I see you've indicated that some of the services are stopped as a result of, there were late payment of ACW service providers for suspension services. Now, surely one would want to avoid that as much as possible because, you know, it's okay if you provide a service, it's not... doesn't involve life and death, so it's something that really, really needs to be resolved, and the fact that it happens year in, year out, we would appeal to whoever could assist here to rectify that situation. It can cause major problems. On slide number 10, and this is, well, 10 and 11, I just have a few issues I want to raise here. This patient registry and master patient index, Minister, I was very impressed when I heard you explaining that it's going to reduce 52-fold to 6, apologies. It's good. I think Honorable Manana asked a question as to whether there's a timeline or time frame as to when that will be completed, because, you know, it's when you hear these that we're going to do this and we're going to do this and it's happening, then it doesn't do much. It doesn't solve a lot of the problems and the issues, Minister, because if it's still going to happen, then it hasn't happened. So we understand that you can't do things overnight, but maybe then if you could answer that question as to when that will be completed, that process, because I think you spoke about 657 or 700 facilities. Maybe to that I would also like to hear is, what are the total, because indicated in that same paragraph is the project is being intended to cover all BC healthcare facilities. What is the total number that is going to be covered? It doesn't give a figure there. It gives what your target was and then what you completed as a percentage or of the target. So what is the total that should be hopefully completed when this is done? I know you did say something about by 2018 that is going to be reduced from 52 to 6. Minister, through your chair, the challenge that we have, and we heard this before, and that's why I say you said in the same meeting, so, and we've heard, you spoke about the challenge with broadband. Now, is there an indication of when that broadband will be resolved so that you could continue ensuring that your data and your, there is no stumbling block as far as the this information is concerned? Apologies, sorry. On slide number 12. This one, I made a note then, and the only concern that I have with regards to this is that this is the report that you're responding to now based on a our report of the 3rd of June 2015, so we can understand the line. So, you know, so could we, you know, is there no way that we could get this information sooner, because again, when you're dealing with health and people's lives, yeah, so sometimes people don't have 10 months to get healthier. Sometimes they might need a little shorter. So, you know, because as Chairperson again indicated in the beginning that there is that mechanism that we have where we can submit written questions, and then from the department side as well, we can also receive written responses to the questions. So it's just that 10 months might be a little late for a response to a concern. I just want to finish here, Honourable Chairperson. I recall last time we saw the Honourable Minister, there was a solution that he had with regards to, because I remember I think that hospitals are in a state, people are going there to die and not to get better. And the Minister then indicated that there were going to be inspectors that were going to be appointed. Can we just get the progress as far as the appointment, and if there is any if there's any progress on the appointment and the work that has been done by those inspectors. And the point raised, and this is the comment, Minister, the point raised about the staffing, and Honorable Manana also mentioned again, the system, it's considered. Look, obviously, you know, there's going to be things that we're concerned about, but when things that are done by the department, then we must also give acknowledgement to that. And this system, it's good to hear, because it makes a lot of sense. You know, I'm talking about the system, and that's good, yes, you know, of appointing staff. So it's good to hear, and again, you know, hoping that is implemented sooner rather than later, because obviously it makes sense here. So I'm encouraged to hear that. And then lastly, Minister, I just have an appeal, and it's based on the comment that I made about the people going to hospitals who die. You know, it's the hospitals are really, I said this the last time and I'm saying it again, and I'm not going to say whether there's been an improvement or not, but it's still the case where the hospitals in our country are in a poor state. People are sleeping in the Eastern Cape where I come from. There's a clinic that was visited. People are sleeping on the floor.
without nexuses. Now, we cannot continue with that. You know, you'd rather take money from elsewhere to make sure the patients are the ones that get treatment that these babies have. They're not asking for much. All wanting is to be treated with dignity. And even those that are dying, to die in dignity. It's just the hospitals are not in a good state at the moment. Thanks, Honorable Chair.
Yes, Honorable Lo.
Thanks, Chair, and thank you for the presentation. Chair, my questions is going to come from the presentation, of course, and then also the Auditor General's report and the National Treasury. So if you don't have some of the answers right now on those two AGs and the National Treasury's report, you can revert back in writing to me or the committee secretary, and then she will ensure that I get it. On the AG's report, on some of the root cause analysis on in the department on the 2014-2015, they noted that there are three that they have noted. One is lack of consequences for performance and transgression, slow response by political leadership and senior management in addressing the root causes of poor audit outcomes, and vacancies in key positions. So that is what the AG have basically found in your department, Minister. If you can please talk to us with AG and what have you put in place to address those root causes that the AG have set in your department. And then on the National Treasury's one, and my Honourable Dr. Yang actually has spoken about it earlier on the three programs, because we have three programs that indicate on your expenditure so spent. And that is basically the HIV AIDS, the TV, the National Health Insurance, and the Hospital Treasury Health Service and Human Resource Development Program. So on that, you have only spent 58% in the third quarter of your expenditure. That is according to the National Treasury report. So you have spoken in your presentation. You have given us indicators to what is contributing to the low spend. But what I would like to hear from the office is, which provinces are responsible for this slow expenditure? And then on the other one that we also were receiving from the National Treasury's office was based on the slow patrolling order delaying the condoms due to the specification was changed to coloring and flavored and all funny things. Nice thing, okay. To coloring and flavor it. So, but wouldn't you rather let people just get condoms and change the specification? And you're sitting with a situation whereby at clinics and wherever we put condoms, our people can't get condoms, and that obviously violates their rights to having safe sex. We have made a decision to change the specification. So I would like to know what caused really those delays in that in the condoms situation, and what was put in place, actions put in place for your whole close spend situation that you are currently having within your department. You haven't mentioned earlier on the work is done, but only the bookkeeping, and honourable members have also alluded to that. But you need to have an action plan in your department. You can't come and say the work is done, but your books is not right. Obviously, then you are not adhering to what needs to be done in terms of finances and how to spend it. So you don't take that accountability process very seriously. So in your department, I think if you can give me what is your action plan to avoid that that happens. We understand that the work is done, but the book also needs to talk to the work that is done. Otherwise, you will forever get in binding, and then you will forever come and tell us that the work is done, but the book is not right. So your action plan in terms of that. Then, on your presentation on page 7, you have put remedial actions on page 7. And to these remedial actions, what we would like to also see is time frames to them. Because we would like to know by when is all of this issues going to be sorted out, because poor waste management, you know, it's an issue. So we would like to know by when is all of this cages going to be sorted, all of the remedial actions that you have put in place. And then let's just check. I cover everything. And then on page 11, on the medical male circumcision service delivery sites, you said traditional sites through contracted GPs and other mechanisms. But in your presentation and within the ages, you are failing to cover vacancies. How are you going to get contract that specific area out if you are failing to even hire GPs or even let them stay within your department? What mechanism are you going to put in place so this GPs are going to stay in this area? And then,
I don't understand this question. The issue of traditional circumcision sites and GPs, I can't get the connection. Can the honorable member please just help me out? I'm not going to be able to answer the question because we don't understand.
Okay, what I'm trying to say, Jay, the AG, in his report on his root cause analysis, alluded to vacancies in key positions. And then on his presentation, they talked about they're going to contract, for example, contracting GPs and all of that. So how are they going to let people stay within, and how are they going to, how can I get a better English word, how are they going to attract GPs if they, to this particular program of the male circumcision? Do you understand now, doctor? Thank you. Also just because we do oversight as members of parliament when we go to our constituencies and so forth. So, and you, when you come to the committee and you see a department, you know, there are indications of slow spending. You are really asking yourself, what is happening? Because our communities are struggling out there. And this department must be at the forefront because it's taking a lot of money from our government's coffers. So it must be able at the forefront. Our people shouldn't be going to hospital to die. I had a situation last month at this one clinic in Zone 9, Tembaletu, where my mom is staying in the area. She called me. There was only one doctor at the clinic, and she couldn't get her diabetes treatment. As a result, she drank the whole night water because she was scared even to eat, because she couldn't get her insulin. So how many cases do we have of that? So we really need to sort that out, Minister. People should be proud when they are going to a public clinic, public hospital. They shouldn't feel, I'm just going there to die. So we really need your government seriousness in that, so that our people get proper health care and quality health care. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, the last is Honorable McLaughlin, and then Honorable Shakima.
Thank you, Chair. Firstly, I express my appreciation to Minister for coming to our meeting. There's very few ministers who actually honour us with their presence, And that does feel a little more relevant when ministers actually appear here to defend their cause, as it were. And I just wanted to express my thanks to you for that. Then I wanted to say thank you to the department as well. You're one of the few departments who tries to give to the 12 pages to ask for in the presentation. Tomorrow we're having the Department of Basic Education, and their idea of 12 pages is 34 pages. Yours is 14, which is so much more helpful to us, I think, as well. I do have a few problems, however, and I know my colleagues have covered a lot of the ground already, so I'll try not to be too duplicating in my comments. On slide 3, can you just explain to me, I found it a little strange, that in your second bullet point down, you describe 72.0% as low spending, and in the next one, you describe 72.5% as within the norm. Now, there's only a half a percent difference here. Maybe you can just explain to me where your cutoff is, or why you would regard these two as different when they're only half a percent out. Just generally, on your overall expenditure per grant and your national health grant, you know, we don't look at money spending here. We also have to look at what you achieve with that spend. It doesn't indicate to us how much of your target you achieved with the spending you incurred. It would be very helpful to us to know that if you spent 80% of your allotted funding for a particular line item, the case to achieve 80% of the target of that line item. Particularly your Prime Minister on the 34% and the HPV component, where you said the work's been done. It just hasn't affected here yet. Now, that would say to me that you've achieved 100% of your target, but only had to spend 34% of your budget. Now you've got to find a way of making the other 71% match. Or it would mean that the paperwork just hasn't caught up to the actual work yet. There are a number of things it could mean. So if we could just get an idea as to what you actually report on spending-wise, relating to how you've actually performed in terms of the target you're trying to achieve with that expenditure. It would also give us a better idea of how effective your expenditure is. My colleagues have mentioned the problem on slide 6. I had the same problem with the slow-paying service providers. I don't think I need to belabor the point, but we must by now surely find a way of getting around this, because it's causing major problems in every department. Slide 7. I was a little bit long to read that we have a lack of HCW officers. And then we also have late payment of HCW service providers. We have a lack of HCW sites and storage facilities. And I think myself, this isn't something that arose overnight. In the health department, waste management has been there forever. We've always had to manage the waste out of hospitals, etc., etc. What have we been doing in the past? If at this point in time, we don't have HCW officers, we don't have resources, the mind boggles. What have we been doing to the waste? And why are we not yet there? There must be an explanation or a reason behind this. You know, it's sort of emphasized further down remedial actions. Now we're going to provide for procurement of hiring HCW officers. Do we have none? Or do we actually have some and we just need some more? I don't understand the problem, but it seems to me to be a rather scary problem, because this is a major source of, I should imagine, all sorts of nasty diseases and illnesses and things like that that could happen. Could you also tell us whose responsibility is it to segregate this material? Where does that responsibility lie? Is it entirely within your department, or is it something you pass on to a service provider or some person who actually deals with that? Can you just give us a little clearer picture there, please? And then if I could take you to slide number 10. I would just like a little more clarity on the where it's indented there. You say the implementation of HPRS has been completed in 657 of the targeted 700 facilities in the NHI pilot districts. That says to me you've indicated or picked out certain districts where you're going to run a pilot project. But in terms of the whole picture, how far are we? But this looks very good that we've achieved very close to 100% of the 700 facilities that were piloted. But what about the bigger picture? How far are we there? How much further have we got to go, is my question. Where are we in the bigger picture? Did you say that the RMR was implemented in all PhD facilities in the provinces except Western Cape? And you said the Western Cape have their own system that's compliant. have to invest and maybe extending that system into the other provinces? Are we reinventing the wheel here? If we've got a province that's doing it right, are we not looking at maybe why can't we use that same system in other provinces? Or we compare it to find out if we can do it better? I just didn't understand why it is that we've got one province that's doing it and seemingly correctly, but we still now having to look to see what we can do in other provinces. Last bullet point on that slide is our standardized PHC patient buying system and a patient piloted. Again, piloted in 10 NHI facilities. I want to know what progress has been made there. And again, where are we in the bigger picture if we just put a pilot project again? In relation to the whole country and the whole department and all the facilities, what kind of percentage are we looking at in that picture within that framework? And the top of the slide is 11. You've got two bullet points there that talk about the rapid assessment in partnership with CSIR in order to identify gaps in the existing information system. And it talks about all these nice to have type things where we're going to have a complete database for national health and all the rest of it. The question that comes up in my mind is, if I've visited any health facilities, as other members have referred to as well, the conditions on the ground are sometimes very harsh, very scary, and I certainly would want to be there myself. There's lack of medicines in some instances. I've been to clinics that are just a container in the middle of a field somewhere, with one nurse who has to get there by taxi, and she'll arrive there halfway through the day, and there's a queue of people, there's no toilet facilities for them, they've got to stand up in the sun. When you're sick and you're suffering, you get to the clinic, you need to be dealt with. You don't need additional hardship for trying to receive medical attention. And yet you're spending money on all these nice to have 21st century nice systems, everything done properly and in terms of computerization and the cyber facilities and all. Aren't we sort of jumping the gun a bit here? Why don't we deal with the basic first, reprioritize it and get down to, let's attend to what people really need in terms of personal medical assistance, rather than all the fancy bits that come out of it. I know we want to be front runners in the world and up with the best, but let's deal with the basics first before we try and be these superheroes when it comes to all our fancy systems and doctor capturing and everything. Just my feeling is that for your average person on the ground, that doesn't mean anything to them whether they have a system and their data is captured and that somebody can push a button and pull out their medical history. They'd rather be dealt with and rather have a better facility on the ground when they need it. Yes, I also had a question, this is probably a bit tongue-in-cheek here, but the last one played on page 11, where you said that this has been expanded to traditional sites, you've got that at GPs, and other mechanisms. I thought, are these other mechanisms of circumcision, and what could they possibly be? The mind boggles. Perhaps you could just help us out there a little bit. Your reports, or your response on page 12, I was also a little bit interested in this, and I hear my fellow members have already mentioned the idea of public works. Now, it's no criticism of the department, please understand. I just want to understand the problem, because public works has all the same properties in their jurisdiction and their portfolio. And most departments have trouble with that, whether it's the Department of Defense or the Department of Health or Education, the Department of Justice. Everybody has problems when it comes to their buildings and building maintenance and things like this. Now it seems you're trying to resolve that issue as far as your problems with the Department of Works are concerned. But I'd like to have, can we get a little more of this whole picture, not necessarily an answer now, but perhaps in writing afterwards, just how serious is the problem? And how likely are we to resolve the issue? Is it going to be two departments at a standoff, or maybe more than two departments? Every department that uses a building perhaps is going to have the same problem. And maybe we could kind of centralize this whole issue and get it sorted out for everybody's benefit, not just the Department of Health, but all the other departments who have the same sort of problem. I think I'll end it there. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable Minister and colleagues, Minister, once again let me reiterate the point of gratitude that one of the very few, when I say few, very, very few ministers that acknowledge your invitation and comes all the way to give us a comprehensive report of the status of health care in South Africa. So I must thank you. Chair, can I start off by asking that, if I remember at some stage we agreed that when we called the national departments, we'd also call the portfolio committees, so that when we're deliberating with the department and we have the portfolio committee, that can help in terms of portfolio committee following up and accelerating and assisting the departments. I just want to comment on that in brief, Chair. Okay? Minister, let me start off by asking if the Minister's designation. Okay. Thank you, Minister. If you could just very briefly just give us a status on I think there's some infection that has created some in Mahatma Gandhi or the kids. If you could just give us a brief an update on what is really actually happening, because it seems to be getting extensive media coverage at this point.
I'm the one who's sure where I'm going to.
Oh, okay.
This year to finish, that will allow me to collect. I'm on the similar issue.
Right, okay, no, thank you very much, because I've been there serious. Okay, I'm going to try to just go through some of them very, very quickly. With regards to, if you could tell us what is the latest, incidentally, Minister, the issue of diabetes and TB, which you are, I know you've been putting a lot of emphasis on the challenge. There's a motion that I will be putting in SADC next week in the SADC plenary with regards to that. Okay, with regards to healthcare workers, I think you remember at some stage we decided that they're no more going to be temporary workers, we're going to convert them to permanent. You can keep this very soon, the other provinces have not. If you could just tell us what is going on. With regards to the NHI, which has been having a problem with DBs, I know Mauritius offers some. You can tell us also, because we're looking forward to the success of this, of that. My concern is on that TB-HIV, I think my colleagues have elaborated on the issue. If you could also tell me whether trade and industry has been in touch with you regards to the issue of condom, because we've been asking them to engage with Department of Health and to create these industries, especially since we are importing like 2 billion rand worth of condoms a year. The other problem is, Minister, we know you're in a very difficult situation. You are judged by what you don't do rather than by what you do. Now, I think you need to tell us how and what is it we're going to be able to do to get the locals, the municipalities, the provinces to comply. Because it's very difficult for you to control it and nothing is happening on the ground. And repeatedly people are saying the department is failing, there are problems here and there. And I know that you have limited mandate in terms of that. Let me sketch some of those things. I would like to know latest, if you have any information on the new HIV infection rate, whether it is now reduced as well, and whether these plans that provinces and things come, what is the involvement of the national department to ensure that these are achievable, they are realistic, or are they just coming in with these plans and then we're running into trouble? With regards to the underspend, I think my colleagues, if you tell us what corrective measures that you have got in place. I know that we have the patient register system, 60 was almost complete, but I know we have challenges in terms of the IT system throughout the country, so I don't know what effect that we have. And I also would like to know in terms of personnel in the departments, the vacancy rate, what is really, which are the ones that we are really pushing, what we are looking for, and whether there's an abundance of like the nursing staff in the country, one province to the other one, because people are going into nursing and then they say they don't have jobs. And if they're here in some areas, maybe you can. On the health, Office of the Health Compliance, whether there is still a plan to get them to include privates, because I think it's only referring to the government at the moment. And then the municipal health, whether there is a plan to bring it in with national, because nothing is happening. They have been on the street saying food stuff is a major problem. There is no control, it seems to be for me. Then there were these medical clinics that are very poorly performing, which includes Itegwini in Devon and Cape Town in Western Cape, which we've been told is a serious problem. And I'm going to stop the final one. SWET is an organization representing the sex workers, and they've repeatedly complained about police harassing them, taking away the condom. I know, Minister, that you put something in place, and I think you said you were going to speak to the police commissioner and how they get this. How far is this? Because I met with them last week, and they are serious challenges throughout the country in terms of that. So for now, I'll actually stop them here, John. And so, sorry, what can we do to make sure that you get greater assistance from the or your subordinates at the ground, so that you can have an overall picture of how well you perform, where the real challenge is, who the culprit are. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Minister, we will allow you to comment first because you indicated to us that you are rushing to.
They gave me up to 20, by 20 past, so I'm sure I've got 20 minutes for that. Yes, I'll respond first if the others will come in.
the first question, I think it came from almost everybody about the issue of work done and not the books. I realize that I confuse members because right from Honorable myself, but all the other speakers, this issue came out. Honorable members, what I was referring to is, I believe as you are here, you are more interested on the amount of work done on service delivery. But your committee is facing service delivery through expenditure. In other words, you are looking at the money to gauge whether the work is done or not. If very little has been spent, you conclude that work was necessarily done. Now, what I was trying to describe here was not for any honorable member, was specifically for HPD vacuum, which I realized had confused many members. We have taken a decision, and we started this project in 2014, that every year forever, in preventing 3A cancer of the cervix, which is the second biggest killer after breast cancer for women. And fortunately, unlike breast cancer, it has got a vaccine, which is called the HPV vaccine. And we have decided to vaccinate girls who are 9 years old, or who are in grade 4, let me say, in 1 year. Now, the problem for vaccination is March. That means you give the first dose in March, and you give the second dose in October every year. Now, when you give these doses, you don't give up them for throughout the whole year. You choose that month. That means in that month, we must have visited all the schools in the country, because these girls are in primary. Every school that is a public school, the only ones we exclude are private schools, because we believe the parents there can afford. But in public schools, we did it. And all the primary schools must be visited. Within that short of a month, you won't find somebody being vaccinated in March, the other one in June or May. It had to end in March, all of them. And then thereafter, you go to the same group of girls who are vaccinated in March. You vaccinate them at the end of October. So it's two doses. So what I was meaning is, at the end of March, you have vaccinated the whole number. If I'm not mistaken, the number is about 350. It's between 350 and 400 every year. These are the number of girls in grade 4 every year. The number between 350 and 400. So whether the numbers reflected here by Mr. Van der Merwe are there or not, 350,000 school girls have been vaccinated. And that's what I mean when I say work has been done. From there, the book work here is about how much was spent. The budget is 200 million. That's what our estimate, when we spoke to the Minister of Finance, that give us 200 million, will vaccinate so many school girls every year. Now, because we have to cover thousands of schools within 1 month, it's impossible to use the cars that we have got in the Department of Health. They just won't do the work. So cars are being hired, for instance, from Avis and all that. And until they have sent in all the invoices about the kilometer service, etc., we won't be able to come to the committee and say we have spent this much. But what we know is that since the project started in 2014, we have never spent more than 200 million. That's why the budget is there. But to give you the actual amount spent for the number of girls vaccinated, we wait for all these receipts. And if they don't come, we can't give you the number here. That's what I was talking about. That the work has been done, what you are waiting is for. We depend on them hanging them. That will travel so many kilos, we have covered so many schools. Because we don't just want to make an assumption. That's basically what we meant. But as you are sitting here as members of the committee, rest assured that 350 or 400,000 school kids, that means every school kid whose parents have signed their consent, because some of them I forgot, some parents may choose to sign a consent and say you can't vaccinate my child. So in other diseases that are infectious, I can overrule that legally. But in a disease like HIV, HIV because it's not infectious, if a parent says no, you can't. So all the kids where the parents are signed consent, they've been vaccinated, all you are waiting for is for the receipt to come in, so that we balance the group. That's what I was trying to explain. It's not about NHI, it's specifically about the HPV vaccine. The issue of key drivers of low expenditure on NHI. Chairman, mostly the work done for NHI, for this target that was given here, was for what we call GB contracting. In the pilot project for NHI, we were piloting contracting for GPs, because here it is chairperson. At the moment, people who visit private doctors are you and me, who have got money or medical aid. Ordinary members of the community have got no access to private doctors, whether a GP or a specialist or a private hospital, but in NHI, we want them to have access. So we're piloting how that access is going to work. Because it was still the beginning, we contacted GPs. In other words, we asked doctors in private practice, go to that clinic, see members of the community who ordinarily won't come to you because they've got no money, but they go to a government clinic. When they arrive there, they find a doctor who ordinarily works in their own surgeries. That's called GP contracting. Now, that contracting was very slow in the beginning for various reasons. Many of the GPs were very reluctant to side with the province. They say in the past they've never been paid money, etc. So we did it at the national level. And then after getting a specific service provider to follow them up and do the payment, it started picking up. That's why it's improving. In the beginning it was not. But there was another reason, which was a societal reason, which was not very good. Many of these doctors have always been contracted in hospitals. Like me, some 8 years back when I was practicing, I did sessions in a public hospital and they pay you a certain amount of money. All we said in this case was, don't go to the hospital, go to the clinic, because that's where most poor people go. They don't go to the hospital because it's very far, go to the clinic. Now, many of these doctors were very reluctant to go to clinics. It's our system. A creative healthcare system where you are going to the top. And when you are asked to go to, because many clinics are rural, no roads and all that, and things out. I prefer to stay here in town. For instance, in Swan is one of the pilot projects. Everybody wants to stay in the city center. But I don't want to contact a GP in the city center because the people is here, California is here. There are many hospitals and many doctors and professors from the of Pretoria, but we don't have a shortage. I would like them to drive out, maybe to the outskirts of Mujahideen district. And many of them find it very difficult to leave their practices because practices are usually in urban areas. So that's why I say some of the views of society. The last reason, when we started NHI, honorable members, people believe NHI is a pot of gold, where you just have to place yourself strategically to make money. NHI, or universal health coverage, is a system of healthcare financing. That puts money so that every member of the community, regardless of their socioeconomic status, can have access to healthcare services or specialists, etc. But many people put in a lot of money, so some of the doctors, when you ask them, why are you not agreed to be contracted? They complain that the money is too little. We said, but you have been doing sessions in hospitals, paying the same amount. And we are doing the same thing. They said, oh, we thought this is NHI will be different. Which means there was confusion in society about what NHI means. It's not about money, it's about provision of services. But as we are saying, that understanding is starting to see to come in the crisis improvement in this spending. The lower expenditure on HIV AIDS and TB. I'm sure I'll leave it to the CFO to try and explain what was going on there. But you are aware that we have started new programs on HIV AIDS, I mean on TB, that are largely successful, very largely successful. And maybe the expenditure may be like the issue. I'm sure members of the committee are aware that we're given a prize by USAID, an international prize on the web on TB. Because they say the amount of work we are doing in South Africa on TB is happening nowhere else in the world. And so that's the amount of work that has been done. The issue of payment on time. At the moment, the government, the cabinet has just decided this is a punishable offense. And it has been given to Minister of Planning and Evaluation, Minister Kadel, to monitor this, which means if there is any under expenditure, when it comes to the evaluation of the performance of the DG, it will be put in. So there's going to be a consequence. In the past, you are right. The president spoke about it many times, it has not been done. I'm here to mention that at the national level, at the moment, we're not guilty of this. Can I confirm? It's bigger. Yes. We're not guilty of this at the national level. Always,
pay on time, but I must tell you, this is not very easy to monitor. For instance, let me give an example. Provinces were not paying in time, not only service providers, even NHLS, National Health Laboratory Services, where we have to test blood. During the height of Ebola, we had a crisis in the National Health Laboratory Services where provinces were not paying. That money comes progressively to us, and we fell to provinces. When they were not paying, an idea that the laboratories are going to crash. Even without waiting for the consequences, I wanted to stop it. I went to the DG. Why do you have to give this money to the province when they are going to refuse to pay? And believe you me, Mr. Van der Merwe from 2011 has got a list of things we call non-negotiable. Things which, if you don't have them in health, you can't pay your healthcare system. Like medicines and medical supplies, NHL and laboratory services, waste management, HIV, drugs, food security. He throws them up every month, and he has got a system which he can show you on the computer, and we told even MCs to monitor it. He can tell you that you are either spending very low, or you know you are overspending, or you are not. In other words, to monitor whether that payment is any for these services. But sometimes they just ignore them. So I said, DG, because they are ignoring, why don't you pay them about this thing? You have got the money. Why transfer it to somebody who is going to need to pay? The DG wrote to the portfolio committee and the treasury and the auditor general to tell them that this is what we are doing. And then after writing those letters, because it was an emergency, she paid directly. If you go to the auditor general books now, we have been punished to irregular expenditure for how much? 300. If you go there, they'll say the Department of Health spent regularly for 300 million rands. That money we took directly to NHLS. And we wrote the letters. When you asked the AG, I even told him you are being evil. Honestly, I said so, because to members of the public, I stole money. 300 million regularly spent. It means F. When actually I was saving lives. Then the only general said, no, we look at treasury regulations. The treasury said you do have to write, you don't write the letter only. You write and gazette. Only after gazetting you pay, and you did not gazette. If we waited for gazetting, I can tell you people are going to die. The committee will have some of me here. Why did you allow laboratories to collapse? At this time when everybody wanted to make use of laboratories. So I have chances and not remain with a bad name of irregular expenditure in trying to resolve this problem. So some of them are very serious technical problem in the way we deal with this payment. The issue of public work, I'm sure it has been mentioned by many speakers. Honorable Mana, I still remember when President Begley made a statement that no more children under season. Check, I'm sure you remember that. A year later, there was a France page story in the press, President writes to the nation. The then Minister of Education was Minister Naledi Pandor, was an MEC, and the Minister of Public Works for Togo Divisa. They called all the MECs for Public Works and Health to meet to resolve this issue. That meeting nearly ended in 50 cars in a war. We had to stop it and send officials out because it was very steady. Here, in Cape Town, I was summoned by NCOP with the then Minister Doyce. They called us to come and explain this issue because of under-expenditure. Only one MEC of public works came and he marched out of the meeting when we were trying to show problems on their side, and in they marched out in anger. So I'm trying to say there's always been an emotional issue, this one. When we discuss it with MECs, they tell us, my senior has instructed that this thing must happen this way. And it stops there. So I don't know how it's going to be resolved. The chairperson, I'm being told that I'm wondering whether they must answer all the other questions. I'll come and finish. The technical ones, I'll come and finish. All the others, I'm sure the interview will be no less than 5 minutes. No more than 5 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead. Mr. Fama. So there were a couple of questions relating to healthcare waste as well as to Horizon at HR. I'm not sure if colleagues want to touch on those, Chair Hiran and Jeanette after will just touch on those things.
Thank you, Chair. Also, just to complete the Honourable Member's question about the fact that we said we're struggling to contact GP, but now we say we're going to use them to improve the male medical circumstances. Minister explained about the GPs, and answer is we don't struggle anymore, they've come on board. But the issue with male medical circumcision does not relate to the same grant framework under which we contract the GPs. So there's no limitation on that. So the different districts have their own agreements with private sector GPs to do male medical circumcision for them. Another reason why we struggle to bring the GPs on under the NHI grant is also the grant framework limitations, but it doesn't apply to whether we want to employ the GPs for any other work. So to get to the healthcare waste, the questions were why now only appointing waste officers? Chairperson, we've never made a secret of the fact that we feel in many of our hospitals the management is poor. This is an issue of management of hospitals and managing hospitals holistically. That means also taking care of every aspect, especially the waste as well. What is the general report that the Honourable Member is referring to? The Honourable Member would have noticed that incidentally Eastern Cape was the only province that didn't have problems in that regard. The reason is sometime after 1994, environmental health services were devolved to municipalities. And when it came to managing healthcare waste, there was also a question, Honourable Member, where does the segregation of waste responsibility fall? That responsibility is with us as health. How you manage the waste within the health facility. Then the health officers must segregate it properly and get it quoted to the waste management centers in the different provinces. That's the environmental affairs takes over because the environmental affairs manages these waste management plans. So we've realized that mistake in evolving all environmental health officers down to the municipalities because when we investigated this and asked the question why Eastern Cape not fighting this regard, it's because they retain some environmental health officers at provincial level. And so we bring, this is why for the other provinces we bring in the healthcare waste managers back into the hospitals as well. There was also a question on when we make promises. When will these segregation cages be in the hospitals? We will prioritize this for this year to make sure at the end of the financial year all the hospitals comply with this vulnerable chain. There was, just want to see the question about the nurses. Are there more nurses that in some provinces than others? We have found that such that the Northern Cape even has an MOU with the Western Cape. There was some period with Western Cape that felt they were producing more nurses that they could use, and there was then an MOU between them and the Northern Cape for the excess nurses from the Western Cape to be deployed to the to the Northern Cape. There's many reports in the media of nurses who say they are qualified and they can't find work. There was also a question in that regard. We actually did an exercise with Radio 72 where we made them send us, because they contacted us about a similar complaint, to send all the names and particulars of nurses who say they are qualified but they can't find work. And on investigation, there were the limited few who really were qualified workers. But we often find people, nurses from foreign countries who have not complied with South Africa's SACWA accreditation criteria and that could not be placed. So if there's nurses, they're welcome to contact us. Our emails are open on the website. And so we'll investigate and see how we can place them. But often people make these tries, and when you investigate, they are not really properly qualified to be placed. I also wanted to answer the question about the information system that the Western Cape had a compliant information system, and so why don't we just use that throughout? Yes, the Western Cape is, we actually, as the health department, employ CSIR. to investigate all systems to look at whether they comply with prescribed criteria and also with interoperability standards, because patient information systems can't stand alone. They must interact with the system in home affairs, they must interact with other diagnostic systems from the laboratories. And it was found that recent cases comply, and it was rolled out throughout the province, so they typically do not have a problem. But in other provinces, there are also systems that comply. It's just that they not roll out ubiquitously throughout the provinces. So the National Health Council's decision was all systems that comply and are cost-effective will be rolled out within the provinces, because we also don't want to sit in the country with a situation where you give a monopoly to one software vendor. So, Mr. Panamera, I'll stop with those responses.
Dr. Andrews will touch on all the information systems and the register issues.
Thanks, Ian. Good morning, honourable members, and thanks for the opportunity to answer your question. I think the Santa has responded partly to the issue raised about the Western Cape. In general, in our rollout of our information system, when we decided to go with a patient-based information system, we decided also as part of our guideline that we should start with where provinces are at, and we should not try and redo everything, because IT expenditure is quite resourcing. I mean, IT investments are high intensity investments, cost a lot of money. So some provinces may have different systems, but it doesn't mean they're not compliant. The Western Cape is just furthering its rollout. And in terms of compliance with our normal standards for interoperability for information systems, as Mr. indicated, we do need our systems to be interoperable. But the Western Cape has come quite far, and their system works well. Some provinces have been lagging behind, and they have systems which are at a lower level of maturity, maybe than the Western Cape. But nonetheless, we are working with all the other provinces to roll out the patient-based information system, which will be on par with what is in the Western Cape. We're just choosing, it's not a different route, it's just one route that the provinces that have not come this far will follow. Now, to also explain and contextualize the big vision for the patient-based information system, why we came about with this approach of, firstly, the global, it's happening globally. Secondly, it's an approach to make NHI work, where patient-based information system is just a necessity for the rollout of effective rollout of NHI. Central to this was to move towards investing in infrastructure, because most of our facilities do not have computers. So the first phase looked at purchasing computers for all the facilities, and in 2015-16, 6,221 computers were purchased for 1,210 facilities, and this year a further 1,970 computers will be purchased for the remaining 190 facilities. Then the second phase was to deliver these computers to all these facilities, which was quite an undertaking. In 2014-15 financial year, 3,220 computers were delivered and installed. Firstly, we purchased them. Then we delivered and installed them in all the facilities. In the 2014-15 year, in 655 facilities. In 2015-16, which was the year we just completed, we installed a further 117 computers in 110 facilities. And the remaining 1,891 computers will be delivered in the coming financial year. So obviously we started with the pilot districts. These were the districts which had better connectivity, because connectivity is the other problem, because our current system is one based on two principles. Firstly, improving the patient filing system, and because that is a nightmare and causes delays in waiting time and therefore impacts on quality of care, because waiting time is a key dimension of quality. And so patient filing system or patient-based administration system, and then a web-based information system. In other words, moving to to web-based information systems in real time. Now, you know that connectivity is a big problem countrywide, and we are currently also working on a plan to improve connectivity. And we're working across an across-government approach led by the Department of Post and Telecommunications to strengthen our connectivity. But in the past 2 years, in order to get the health patient registration system set up, in order to improve the filing system, we also had to rationalize the registers and come up with a patient file. So that was a two-pronged approach as well. And that has been completed. So a complete patient registration system at the moment includes all of these dimensions which I've just said, and we will therefore turn them HDR is functional. So in other words, they are two filing systems, they are web-based information systems, and they link to the internet and enter their patient in real time. So as patients register, we can actually see clearly how many patients have registered in whichever clinic. And to date, we've come very close to meeting our target. And as we said, one of the honorable members commended us that we have 647 facilities in the LHI pilot districts which are functional. However, this is being rolled out now to the rest of the country. Initially, the process was slow because it's a culture shift, it's lots of systems we're working on concurrently, but the lessons have been learned, and surely the scale-up is much more rapid and will proceed much more rapidly. The only barrier will really be the connectivity, but we are also working with it. Even the Deputy Minister is assisting us and part of the program to work on the rollout connectivity.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, Deputy Minister, and Honourable Members of the Committee. I will respond to the vacancy rate that was raised. Firstly, to differentiate between the vacancy rate of National Department of Health and then the provinces. The National Department of Health vacancy rate is at the end of March 2016 stands at 3%. And the challenges that the department is realizing with the recruitment is for critical posts in the areas of infrastructure, in the areas of health workforce, not internal HR workforce, and then also from the port health area where we inherited the function from the with effect from last financial year. But we have made progress with the current financial year, and we have prioritized the post, and we will move with speed to work within the 6 months recruitment target set by DPA, despite the fact that we as a department internally are working on the 4 months and around rate. That is with effect in relation to national health. With regards to the vacancies at provincial level, there is work that is currently being done by the department in collaboration with the National Treasury, and the latest figures that we have, which we are still working on, reflect that the vacancy rate on the total post at provincial level stands at 14%, and we are talking about the total staff establishment of 345,053 posts. So we need to indicate to the department that provinces are finding it very difficult to fill their posts, as already indicated by the Minister and the CFO, that they're struggling to attract health professionals and other technical staff, coupled with the fact that we do not have adequate resources as in the budget. The COE budget is not adequate because we are trying also to limit it within the averages and the ceilings that are put forward by the National Treasury. Thank you, Chair. I will stop there. With regard to the Wyson, we've already indicated that the Minister indicated that we've done the primary health care, and now we are moving to district health, hospital. We are not in a position now to give the timeline, but something that we can submit in 19. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, with regard to the financials, the issue of the revive, I saw you spending at 40.8% at the third quarter, that's great. It was slow at the time. you said with the adjustment budget, we made some adjustments back to provincial expenditure, provincial budgets, and that's why I said the total budget actually reduced from 912 to about 621 million, if I'm not mistaken. So that is the expenditure by the end of the last quarter. The issue of the expenditure on TV and HIV, I can go back in and just confirm that if you don't mind, I'll come back to you in writing on this one. But you know, on HIV, for instance, we've had some issues with suppliers not being able to supply the demand, mainly because of exchange rate issues and stock availability. But if you allow, I will expand on that for you. Issue of FSC, you're right, we'll meet with the FSC. Obviously, we'll take the leadership from the National Treasury when we engage on the ground framework, so that's definitely in the future. The preliminary expenditure is actual expenditure. That's what was on the system at the time when you wrote this report. So that's actual expenditure. But right now, you know, when they do the reconciliations between equitable share provinces and conditional grants, there are some journal that might affect the files. But as it stands, those are the actual numbers by the balance of the report. Pick up another one. The 2.5% norm. Yes, we use it for our own sort of record, if you like, for database. And for our dashboards. So if you have our 2.5%, then we will say that you're underspending, and keeping that norm there. One could argue the norm could be 3%. We're just trying to standardize it, especially when we report back to our provinces. The issue of the National Treasury indicating safe expenditure, yes, we can show you, and I can use the presentation here, per province, what was the expenditure by the end of the third quarter. And we've got extensive reports per conditional grant and per province per conditional grant. And we've also got various information, so I can leave it with the secretary at least available right now for the case. I'm sure that Anissa will still pick up on the stock out. See them good day for now then.
Just on the issue of mentioned now about the provinces and the expenditure, if you could leave that information either Darren or Zandi, because just a point of view. Now, Minister, we want to welcome you back. There was one issue that was raised that talked to the issue of the department, you know, rushing to do this state of the art thing, yes, instead of just focusing on the basics and the areas for which do not yet really have facilities. I wanted to also say, Minister, that in response to that, if you could also indicate to what extent is your human mobility also affected there, because you might actually human mobility the effect on addressing the basics, balancing addressing the basics with creating the state of the opportunities. I raise this issue because you might have a nice unit somewhere in the rural area. Perfect. But you have people moving from there to some other area, probably urban areas, and then creating the informal settlement, and there is no facility there. So this kind of mobility will affect your ability as well to provide adequate health facilities, and that has might have an impact as well on your budget and your expenditure. Could that be, and I'm not saying that should be an excuse, but I'm saying let's look at the reality as well of the kind of human mobility South Africa has, and it's not a South African phenomenon, it's a phenomenon.
school and so on, and then create other communities where there are no facilities, not been provided with facilities, and probably the budget was allocated for that kind of a system of a new community somewhere.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. I still have quite a number of issues to explain, and I'm not sure what the team explained in my absence, but let me start with this one of basics rather than technology. I'm really urging members not to find either or in this issue, because it's not either or. It's very important. How do I put it? This issue is discussed even in Davos at the World Economic Forum, because they realized that you can't build world economies without good health care systems around the world. And the argument here is that it took developed countries, let's take an example of Europe, it took them about 100 years to arrive where they are, where they've got the best health care system, compared to us in Sub-Saharan Africa. They have to go for a period of 100 years to arrive there. We have 100 years now. Can we tell our people that, look, you see what's happening in Europe? It took them 100 years. We're going to wait for 100 years to arrive there. Do we have that latitude? Obviously, we can't. So what then do we do? Because the world is developing very fast. In the past years, perhaps it was acceptable. It's no longer acceptable in the modern era, because health is a human right. We need to provide it very fast. Now, the argument is that we need to do something called leapfrogging. How do you leapfrog healthcare systems in developed countries to jump decades and arrive there in Europe without going through the period of 100 years? A good example is communication technology. If you move to Europe, you'll find the telephone line in the most outside farm area, etc. You'll find the red line. It took them 100 years to bury the lines under the soil, in the air, underwater, to put them all over here. But within a small, very small period of time, after it arrived there through the cell phone, you can now go to the most rural area and communicate with the cell phone. That is leapfrogging in technology. We didn't have to wait for that and say, no, wait for us, we are going to haul out a cable from this village, it will take 10 years. We didn't go that. Now they are saying, can we do that with health services, not only with information technology? Are you able to leapfrog and arrive there? In the sense, there are three methods of doing that. You can arrive there if you use the three methods in leapfrogging. The first one is technology. This is so, please don't exclude it as painful. It's not painful. It can, many of us arrive where we want to be. So the first method is technology. The second one is new business systems. Can you look at the way in which you've been doing business? Can you look at the way in which, when I say business, I mean services. The manner in which you do business in making sure that there are services. Can you change that? Is there anything to change to make us move faster? The last one is behavioral change. Can you change the behavior of the nation to make them arrive where others 200 years? What do I mean by that? For instance, can you change the behavior of the nation to understand that in the modern era, curative medicine doesn't have good results, it's expensive, doesn't guarantee. What will guarantee is preventative medicine. Are you able to move society in that direction? At the moment, everybody loves curative medicine. That's why all of you here go to private hospitals. You are in there for curative medicine. You don't care much about prevention, because they are not going to do any prevention anyway. But because we are the elite, we are the powerful, society believes that is the right way to go. When you talk to them about prevention, they believe it's below standard. That's why a country like Cuba is so highly successful in preventative medicine, but nobody talks about it. Last year, Cuba became the first country on the planet to bring an end to mother-to-child transmission of HIV. That means they brought it to an end. It's no longer happening. They are not waiting for anybody to get a child with HIV and treat them. They prevented it. It's no longer happening. You have very little about it. You didn't hear much because it happened in Cuba. That's a very important innovation.
But because of the behavior of the thinking of the nation, that is not regarded as an important issue. The director of the CEO of the World Diabetes Federation put it even in clearer terms. He said, let's see diabetes. There are three ways of dealing with diabetes in the world. The first one is healthy lifestyle. It's healthy, not the type of things you usually serve as when you come to community meetings. It's healthy, avoid certain things, exercise, control your life. Even if you've got diabetes, you are likely to need no medicine if you practice that. That means a healthy living. Choose what you eat, at what time, the amount, what time, and exercise. That's the first way. The second way is to look for expensive drugs and injections. Three times a day, start poking yourself with injections and popping. The third way is even more, is worse, but that one society celebrates, is to change organs. Wait until the kidneys that are damaged, change them. Wait until the person gets cataract from diabetes, do a cataract operation. Wait until the retina is finished and do laser therapy. And he says, any professor or any health worker who specializes with the first method, it's never recognized by anybody. In fact, we look at them as very stupid. I still remember in medical school, a professor of community health was regarded as a more inferior professor. He's doing with community health. But he said the one who changes organs, that means when you are already damaged, that's the one which gets the Nobel Prize. We're going to celebrate that person and tweet them all over the world. This man can change your kidney and took a new kidney. But the man who makes you keep the kidneys you were born with, never celebrated. And he said, that is what we need to change in the world. He said that in 2010. In 2012, the Director General of the World Organization, Dr. Margaret Chan, said there are 10 structural problems of health in the world. One of them, he said, an insistence on cure, leaving prevention by the wayside. So we have got to change that behavior. Now let me summarize, Chairperson. I said there are three methods. It's technology, it's change of business practices, and change of behavior. So technology is part of that. Don't undermine it, and don't take it as fancy. Let me give an example. People wait, Chairperson, for about 5 hours just to get a file before they even see a doctor. Why? Because, Chairperson, back in 2004, we had 400,000 people who were on ARVs. That was in 2004. 10 years later, only within a period of 10 years, that number moved from 400,000 to 3.4 million. How do you resolve this? Obviously, the queues will go longer than 5 hours, 10 hours. How do you resolve it? There's no way you can resolve it than through the use of technology. If you can't use technology, you will never resolve this problem. It is a basic thing. I attended many clinics where I found this anger, where we thought we have delivered something and people get angry because of waiting. Believe you me, without technology, it will never work. What technology is that can put a filing system where a person comes and press. Within 45 seconds, they've got the file. That to them is a complete change of life. It's a game changer to them. They don't look like it, as it is fancy. The other reason why we do that, file easily gets lost. In most of our clinics and hospitals, a file is lost, they open a new one. All the information is lost. With this system, there's no file that will be lost because it's electronic. There will be made of copies, etc. So regard this as basic rather than as fancy. We are not talking here of a fancy system. We are talking of a basic system that is relevant to our present existence. Because without that, you won't be able to save the second problem. So we are not doing anything that is out of this world. The other one, I must deal with, is stockhouse. If you were seeing 400,000 people with ARV 10 years ago, now you've got 3.4 million. Obviously, your stocks and the logistics are going to be problematic. So what do you do? By using technology again, that's the only way. Without technology, believe you me, we'll never solve this problem of stock out. What technology are we using now? We have got at least in 5 provinces now or in 4. I know KwaZulu-Natal, Limpopo, yes, whereby we're working with Vodacom on their system. There is an application on the cell phone where the nursing system, every day or every week, must take that cell phone and scan this barcode on the medicine bottle. While they scan it, they send it to Pretoria. We are able, that information is able to tell us how much stock is left in that particular clinic. So because you know we are able to tell them that you have got 10 bottles of Panal and you usually use 30 a week, we are about to run out of stock, why are we not ordering? That system is helping us to reduce the incidence of stock out. We saw many people that need medication. By the way, I keep on quoting HIV and AIDS. There's an outbreak of diabetes and high blood pressure, I'm sure you know. So the number of people who want treatment is increasing in our clinics, who want tires and go to fever, so and want drugs. So the drug store out is not only for ARVs, it's for all those things. And that's helping us. The second technology we are using, which has been helpful, and I'll show you that it's not fancy, it's quite practical, is that we have got technology that will tell us there are 10 depots in the country. Depots are warehouses where medicines are stored in the province before they are sent to facilities. There are 10 of them. We have got technology that can tell us why we sit in Pretoria, how much stock is in every depot. We're able to do that. The same technology can tell us how much stock is the company that has got a tender having. If we give tender to 5 companies, we're able to trace them and say, this company has this much. Now, just to give you, honorable members, how it helps us. Sometimes in February, there's a reporter from Soweto who was in a clinic in the Free State, and he found that they don't have one of the ARVs called Alluvia. It was not in the clinic. And when they phoned the spokesperson in the Free State, he said, it's not us only, it's the whole country. The whole country is suffering. And the reporter phoned us with excitement. He said, Minister, what are you doing? The whole country has got no Alluvia. We went into this system and found that in the airport in the Free State, they've got 80,000 units. The company that supplies this Alluvia has 320,000 units. And we use only 200 units in the whole country. So we had 320,000 units, which means we had much more than a month's supply. And their neighbors got 30,000 units. So we phoned them and said, you told a reporter that you got no Alluvia, is a problem of the whole country. Go to your jail table, you'll find 30,000 units. It's then that they got exposed and apologized. But it told us. So technology is very important to tell you what's happening. The last thing that we are having, we have got the guideline, which even you as members, as you see here, you can offload onto your cell phone, if you so wish, to trade these things. That is the guideline for the treatment of HIV and AIDS. It will give you what treatment you give, under what conditions, when you have made that diagnosis. It can even help those who don't know to calculate the dose, the weight. If you know the weight of the baby, it will tell you that the weight of this baby, this is how you calculate the dose. It gives you the side effect. It tells you everything. But it can even give you stock hours, meaning what? If the doctor has offloaded that 15, he calculates that for this baby, I need this much dosage. And he orders the medicine. And that medicine is out of stock. The doctor can press somewhere on the cell phone. It informs us immediately in Pretoria that I'm in this hospital, in this clinic, I've ordered this drug, and it's out of stock. We know immediately at the end when he's making that prescription. So this is also very helpful. The fact that these systems are not being used and they keep on reporting stock out is not because we're not trying. We're trying our best to use technology and we don't know any other way in which you can resolve these problems in modern times without technology. The other issue, Honorable Long, you asked about...
the minister, we are beginning to run...
Oh, yes, okay, fine. Let me deal with this last issue about circumcision that we are feeling to attract GPs because it's very important. What you are saying here, chairperson, as you know, there's traditional circumcision and there's medical male circumcision. We have got 400 million rand contributed by PEPFA for medical male circumcision in South Africa. But that's voluntary. It's called voluntary medical male circumcision. Then there's traditional circumcision, which you know, is causing problems in the Western Cape, in the Eastern Cape. We have allocated 20 million for each province. Any traditional leader who wants to make use of this facility has got 20 million rand in there. We don't give the money to them. We say, go and look for doctors who are members of your culture. That is people who have gone through this culture. who can sympathize for you, because they don't want Inkwenwe to go in there, as you know. Look for guys who are not Inkwenwe. In Limpopo, there are many of doctors who are. In Eastern Cape, there's no doctor who's an Inkwenwe. So they can hire them. The problem is, they are still very resistant on that, especially in the Eastern Cape. In Limpopo, the plan is then we pay. The chief goes to look for doctors and say, you went there, come, climb the mountain, do their job, and we pay them directly from here. But if that system is not used, it becomes a problem. I think maybe that's where I need to stop. Yeah, no, you asked me about Klebsiella in Mahatma Gandhi. Yes, remember, Klebsiella is not like Ebola or Zika, which is what I was telling Pastor Mutlu on the CFL. This excitement that the Ebola were, Klebsiella were hiding it. Klebsiella is a hospital-borne infection. In any developing country, it is there. If you go to ICU or neonatal unit, you have the nose of the patients or the anus, you are likely to find Klebsiella. It has colonized most hospitals because of the wrong use of antibiotics. The problem comes when it breaches the barrier and gets into the blood. Then you see the infection, which happens all the time. If that infection affects many people more than it usually does, we say there's a breakout. The problem that you are hearing, Honorable Imam, is that there was a terrible breakout in Mahatma Gandhi in 2005, where 22 babies died. And people are thinking about that and they believe it's something new. That's what is happening there now. The Klebsiella, nobody has died. It affected 10 babies, which means it breached their barrier and went into the bloodstream, but it has been successfully treated. That's what we are dealing with there. And it's no longer spreading, and we believe the important thing is how to deal with it. But as you know, unfortunately, some politicians have made it some weapon. When I read it, it looks like it's an excitement. It nearly happened with Ebola, if you remember. The patient was announced to have had Ebola in South Africa in 2014 when there was no Ebola. I don't have to the media to explain. I think it's something like that because there's a politician there who's running around and saying, there's something terrible in Mahatma Gandhi which the government is hiding. We're not hiding 10 babies and but this Klebsiella. We deal with it every year. We get more than 10 cases every year. Some of it is never reported because for us it's routine. It's not something that is out of this world. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Sheikh. I will not take your question. I'll tell you why.
It's not a terrible issue.
There's a meeting, there's a meeting that is just about to begin there. Yeah. And we need to clear up this room before that meeting begins. So, can I ask you, Honorable Sheikh Imam, and all of you members who still want to you can write, send your questions to the secretary, and then we'll send to the department. Yeah. Okay.